Welcome to a special edition of Book Waves on Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. Today we're going to be talking about the independent bookstore, its past and its future. My guests are Andy Ross, the former owner of Cody's Books for 30 years and now a literary agent, Bill Petrocelli, one of the owners of Book Passage Bookstore in Corte Madera, Clark Kepler, who is the CEO and president of Kepler's Books in Menlo Park on the peninsula, and with Leslie Berkler, who worked at Cody's and now works at Book Passage. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the differences and the similarities, because you're now in two different stores in the independent book field. We'll also be giving away a DVD of Paperback Dreams, the history of the independent bookstore in the Bay Area, focusing specifically on Kepler's and on Cody's. The documentary ends at a point where Cody's had folded the store in San Francisco and was still struggling, and then there's an addendum stating that Cody's is gone and, Andy, you sold the store to a Japanese conglomerate. How did Cody's finally end?
I was not there when it did end. I quit about 6 months before they closed. But we were having financial problems for quite a while. We were losing money long before we opened the store in San Francisco. Hiroshi Kagawa from Japan did have some money, and they put it into the store. And they kept it going for a while, but they had financial problems in Japan, and they couldn't keep funding Cody's losses. So they closed one day. I left because I was just burnt out. I'd been doing it for 30 years, and I ran the store for a year after Hiroshi bought the company. But it was very stressful. We had a lot of debts. It was just hard on me.
Let's talk a little about the independent bookstore today, because Cody's is gone, but Book Passage and Kepler's are both surviving and perhaps even prospering. Clark Kepler, Kepler's began in the mid-50s. Your father founded it. You took it over in the 80s, was it?
Yes, I came to work in the business in 79 and in the 80s took over the running of the business and have been at it for about 31 years now.
And about 3 or 4 years ago, you closed the doors and it reopened under a different status. What is that about? What is that status?
Well, 5 years ago, this year, was our 50th anniversary, and we were essentially losing money, and I was unable to continue to fund it from my own personal, and therefore I closed it abruptly in August of 2005. Essentially, we had a response from the community that was quite astounding, with hundreds and hundreds of people coming forward trying to figure out how to make this not happen. How could Kepler stay in business? And they wanted to invest. We got a small group of investors that actually bought into the business, bringing in $1 million, which allowed us to get back on our feet within about 6 weeks. We were reopened. We had renegotiated a lease with our landlord to allow us to continue. Our sales bounced back, rebounded through the holiday season. And the biggest challenge that we knew was essentially that our community expressed their understanding that they were essentially voting with their pocketbooks, that if they wanted an independent bookstore in their community, they needed to buy books from us. I had customer after customer when we reopened essentially say, I'm so glad you're back. I feel guilty that I helped put you out of business. I didn't realize that shopping on Amazon could put you out of business. And that was a real aha moment for myself. Mostly, I was surprised they didn't know that. What it turned out is that a significant number of customers expressed a new awareness there. Our challenge has been to stay relevant during this turbulent time in the book industry, and especially with the electronic book factor, that even a core audience of shoppers that love an independent bookstore, convenience is a factor that they're looking at still, and we're challenged to bring a 20th century business into the 21st century.
Well, quick question then. What's the status now? How healthy is the store?
We're definitely feeling the economy and I think the ebook at this point. The impact of that, bringing foot traffic into the store requires that we do a lot of activities, lots of events, and we are doing all we can to satisfy our customers and to sell books. We're very challenged. I mean, this is a key time in the book industry where the availability of the ebook really means that we want to be a part of that distribution chain, and we're working with various vendors and through trade association to try to make that happen. It's a critical point in time that if we don't become a factor there, we may not survive as a traditional bookstore.
And Bill Petrocelli, I would assume that your challenges are the same as Kepler's challenge. You also had a Barnes & Noble open up down the block from you. How's Book Passage doing these days?
Well, Book Passage is doing fine. And when you say fine in the book business, you don't mean we're not talking Goldman Sachs here. We're talking just you keep your nose above water. And
you're not talking Lehman Brothers either, I hope.
No, not talking Lehman Brothers either. We're very fortunate in our community. Our customers have been very loyal. Yeah, we faced a serious challenge when Barnes & Noble decided to open right down the street from us in a huge store. Frankly, I think Barnes & Noble is facing some challenges right now themselves. The book industry is changing considerably, and the way books are distributed is changing. I don't know how much deeply you want to get into this, but I would view the book business right now as basically consisting of three components. One is things like warehouse clubs, Target and Walmart. Those clubs actually account for about 40% of the sales of all books in America, a huge percentage of all books. But they're only talking about 200 or 300 titles at any given time, so it's heavily weighted towards celebrity bestsellers. But this distorts the entire business. This distorts the way the publishers view it. The other third of the business, maybe about a third of it, is online sales and electronic books. The major player there is Amazon, a very vicious competitor, I have to say. They really want to dominate the business, and if not stopped, they probably will. There, although they have a broad number of titles they will sell you, there's no way that electronic end of the business really nurtures books, really nurtures readers, really gets new people out in touch with readers. There's no way you get any new growth in the business through that. So that leaves the rest of the business, the traditional bookstores, competing over what's left in the business. And in that group, you have chain stores and you have independents. I think the independents have started to gain ground against the chain stores a little bit, primarily because they've kept much closer to their customers. And the one thing that a local bookstore has is the ability to hand sell books, the ability to display books. People can come in and they can serendipitously go through and find books they want. And you can bring authors in touch with local readers and do all the things that a buy local kind of campaign can do. So I think that's going to be an important part of the book business. And probably the warehouse clubs are going to be an important part of the business, and probably electronic books and books sold over the Internet are going to be an important part of the business. It's really a question of, you know, the relative strength of those sections and whether independent stores can be the dominant force really that they should be within the neighborhood stores.
Leslie Berkler, having worked at Cody's in a key position for several years and now at Book Passage, do you see any difference in the business plan? Was it simply that Book Passage was in Marin and had it slightly easier with maybe less competition?
Let me give you a multi-layered answer to that.
Okay.
I think that Cody's and Book Passage are two entirely different animals, both wonderful community centers. And I think everyone who's listening to this program loves and longs for the long life of bookstores, because when you walk into a bookstore, there's magic. It doesn't happen online. It doesn't happen when you're at a Sam's Club. But you walk up to somebody and say, hey, I like this book. And they say, I just read this one. Or yesterday at Book Passage, we had 126 people having lunch with Isabel Allende. It's not happening on Amazon. It's not happening at Walmart. So there are these beautiful things that happen only in bookstores. And most of us will do almost anything we can to try to keep the bookstores alive. And so everybody who's listening, think about where you're shopping. Think about where you're going, because this is what we really all want to sustain. But in talking about how different the two stores are, Cody's was a large urban store which had one of everything. And these stores were very successful for many years. And now what you see more popular are smaller stores that are in smaller towns where the neighbors live close to the store and they come in every day. Cody's had, during my time in Berkeley, I came in 87, the development of the suburbs. So we had thousands of shoppers who'd come from Walnut Creek and from Danville and from San Jose, everywhere, to shop at Cody's because it was the store. What we saw was the development of suburbs, so there was a Crown Books. If you wanted to read the bestseller, which many people were reading at that time, you didn't need to drive in. You didn't need to worry about parking. Also, there were a lot of changes in the sort of deals the publishers were giving. There was a lot of unfair advantage to chains. And there was a lot of tax issues, which perhaps Andy and Bill can talk about later, tax evasion through the online stores. Book Passage is a smaller store in regards of inventory, but it has incredible programs. I run the classes division, and we probably put on 200 classes every 2 or 3 months. We have wonderful conferences for mystery writers, children's writers, travel writers. I'm having a class in this fall by Kara Black, who is a well-known San Francisco-based mystery writer who came up and became published because she attended our Mystery Writers Convention. We have membership programs like I know Clark Kepler has. Basically, we're the place for people to come to gather and share ideas. And I think in a lot of ways, because we're all hooked into the Internet and we're plugged in at home, we're missing that community center. And I think that's what Book Passage does, and that's what I love about bookstores.
Clark, would you say at this point that your model is pretty much similar to Book Passage then?
In terms of what we're doing as a bookstore, yes, their class program is substantial, and we do author events and book fairs in schools and a lot of outreach programs, similar concept, different approaches perhaps there.
Andy, why couldn't Cody's make it? Was it simply because Telegraph Avenue store was bleeding you dry, or...?
I think it had mostly to do with changing shopping patterns and changing reading patterns. I think we could have survived if we became more like the chains, but I didn't know how to run a store that way, and I didn't want to run a store. My idea of Cody's is the way it was in the 80s, and, you know, we did change with the times, but at a certain point, it just didn't seem like the same store. I remember 6 months before we closed the Telegraph store, you do returns based on, you know, a computer will generate a list based on books that haven't sold in 9 months or a year, and I saw on my list that we were returning Kant's Critique of Pure Reason, which was perhaps the fundamental book of modern philosophy, the most influential philosopher of all time. And the fact that we couldn't stock that book gave me a real sense that the times had changed irrevocably for Cody's. We tried opening the San Francisco store. It was a mistake. We were doing it so that we could diversify. But, you know, frankly, I don't think Cody's would have... It probably lasted longer because we did that. We put a lot of money into that store. And also we just saw in Berkeley that a lot of the people who had been our customers were students, and they were buying books online. And in some cases, they were not reading anywhere near as much as they did in the 80s. And Telegraph Avenue had very much declined. But even the 4th Street store was selling less books than they had in the past. It was tough. I just didn't know how to save it and still stay true to the vision of Cody's.
Leslie?
As a clarification, I should add that I'm Andy Ross's wife, so I was intimately involved with Cody's. But one thing that I think is true is that we saw declining sales. We knew the marketplace was changing. You know, we were doing what we could to adapt to it, but we so loved what we were doing. We didn't recognize how rapidly the economic impacts were affecting us. You know, Cody's was a beautiful store for 50 years, and we didn't ever really imagine its demise. Had we not been true believers, you know, maybe 20 years ago we would have made different changes, but we had so many loyal customers, and we so loved and believed in our mission that we just really didn't see it until it was far too late for us to turn back.
Bill Petrocelli from Book Passage, you have a blog on Book Passage's mm-hmm. site, and you were talking a little bit about something you mentioned before, which is these box stores only stocking very few books, and people can't find the books, and they're going through price wars. Is that all that different from the very old days when you'd go into a B. Dalton and see virtually nothing, and you'd go into a supermarket and see the same 10 items? Is there a difference today?
Yeah, I think there is a difference, and it's partly qualitative and partly quantitative. The book business now is clearly being dominated by the big box retailers that are not booksellers. These are warehouse clubs that sell anything, and they'll pick the cream of the titles that they think will sell to a mass audience, buy them in huge quantities, and sell them in huge quantities probably. And so you're talking about maybe only 200 or 300 titles out of 50,000, 60,000 titles that might otherwise get published. what happens is this puts a lot of pressure on publishers to feed that particular phase of the market, and it decreases the publisher's ability to really publish quality books that wouldn't sell in those quantities and that would sell through general bookstores. It's a pretty dispiriting thing to walk into a big box retailer and see how few books they have and how much they're flogging them. And let me say, I think it affects what's happening in the publishing business because the publishing business has changed considerably. Every major publisher in the country is owned by a conglomerate, and they're a very small part of the conglomerate. So the publishing end of what they do does not dominate things. It's done by other corporate considerations they might have. I might also add that most of them are also foreign-owned, but I don't think that makes any difference one way or the other. It just happens to be that there are large conglomerates that run publishers. Let me give you an example of how this can affect it. Sarah Palin's book, I don't know how many millions of dollars HarperCollins paid as an advance for that, but those are many, many millions of dollars that did not go into advances to really quality authors. Now, why did they do it? Did they do it because they thought she was a great literary author and that she might have a chance of making a breakthrough as a writer? Of course not. What they did, this was part of a political agenda that the larger corporate company, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, had, and it's part of a political agenda. The money that was otherwise going through the book business could have gone for quality books, was really being diverted into a political project to serve another corporate end or another political end. That's one of the most dramatic examples of it. But frankly, it happens all the time. Companies have an agenda that's different than the health of the book business.
Well, let me interrupt you there. I think their agenda was really money and business because the book sold 2.7 million copies by the end of last year, and it's still selling. But I think the point that I see is they are very much focused on the bottom line. They used to say that publishing was the marriage between art and commerce, but now it's sort of a S&M relationship and commerce is the dominant party. I'm finding that as an agent now, I'm at the other end of the food chain and I'm trying to sell books that I know would have sold to major publishers 5 or 10 years ago that I sold a lot of at Cody's, and I am having trouble selling them to even smaller publishers. They are obsessively bottom line oriented. They are extremely resistant to taking risks. And they are, as Bill says, increasingly focusing their dollars into these huge blockbuster bestsellers that have outlets in these big box stores and chain stores. And they do very well there, but it's at the expense of what we call the mid-list.
When I talk about a celebrity-driven bestseller, they really fall into two categories. One is somebody that's a celebrity from another business that writes a book or has a book written that has their name on it. So they get millions of dollars, and this becomes the focus of all the marketing dollars from the publisher. There are also big-name authors who become a big name over the years, and they get similar kind of treatment. But the point is, those authors would never get to be the big-name authors they are if it were not for the fact they built up their careers through sales through bookstores and frequently through independent bookstores over the years. And a lot of very big authors will tell you, yeah, now we get into the warehouse clubs. Yeah, now we get big advances, and our sales are very, very high. But it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't started our career with small booksellers who are now in jeopardy. And I worry for the next generation of authors.
Well, what I see at my end is every year, I'm seeing first novels that have been bought with the hope, throwing something against the wall, hoping it will stick. First novels, they're promoting the hell out of them, and most of them are just falling by the wayside. And usually a novelist doesn't hit his or her stride until the third or fourth books. And these people aren't getting their third or fourth books.
Well, I can actually answer that. Publishing has gone the way of every other media and entertainment field, which is that they are under the straitjacket of the Nielsen company. They set up something called BookScan, which is a database that retrieves sales at the point of sale. And it's a Nielsen company. And what it allows publishers to do is, with a hit of a button, they can see how well any book is done. And typically, particularly for fiction, it's a lot easier to get published if you're a debut author and they fall in love with your book than if you have an equally good book but your previous book bombed. If they look you up on BookScan and they see your last book sold 3,000 copies, that's it. The kiss is death.
Yeah, well, what Andy's saying is the business is really run by the bean counters, not the book lovers. The book lovers are still very prevalent in the major publishers. There's some wonderful editors, wonderful salespeople, wonderful marketing directors and all that. When push comes to shove, it's the bean counters and the corporate parent that make the major decisions.